Welcome everyone to week one, our first Setting the Context talk.
So I'm sitting here in the forest where I live, and I'm not quite sure what I'm going to say, but I thought I would start to talk about your mythic life and the looking glass and just see what shows up. As I've mentioned, my specialty is really working with calling from a non-linear approach. And so in doing it this way, I'm also kind of practicing and sharing with you ways to just step into the unknown and see what arises, and allowing ourselves to trust more in that. And from that place, the carving and the shaping and the more masculine attributes of our calling can come and shape and help us bring that as an offering into the world. But it's a great practice to drop into the feminine and into the unknown and just drop a seed of intention and see what shows up. So here we go. Well, I think I'd like to start by saying, in terms of the literal level of reality, that really has to do with our story that is really important to honor at the literal level. A lot of the healing can't happen unless we really face just the bare bones facts of our lives. So for example, for me, I had an alcoholic father, a very disempowered mother. And you could say, on a literal level, you could say my issues in my life have to do with, a lot to do with that. I grew up in a restaurant in Hollywood, so that was an influence. My parents had a restaurant right across from Goldwyn Studios, and was very artistic and very shy. Loved to draw and loved to paint. And as I got into my adolescence, my father died when I was about 15. I had an eating disorder for a while, made my way to college, became a massage therapist after college for about 15 years, made my way into having actually a family, which was unexpected, a beautiful, beautiful two children and a wonderful family that is still healthy and intact and brings me a lot of joy, and then went back to graduate school and got my PhD in psychology. So that would be a very literal level of my life. What are the facts, kind of maybe some of the demographics, some of the aspects of, dysfunction or health in my family, things like that. Like I said, it's really important to be able to really own the bare bones of our lives, and I wouldn't be able to be where I am today if I didn't really work with what it meant to be raised by an alcoholic and things like that. But there is a limit to that because our identity can get contracted and limited when we just stay in the literal realm, and our souls are so much more than just the literal level of our life story. So to open up to symbol and myth, to allow our identities to start to shape shift and be informed, not by something that we kind of grasp at and choose to replace our literal story with, but things that come to us, things that our soul is riveted by, drawn to, sometimes even scared of. What images have been with you your whole life, that have been with you your whole life? So, for example, I was given a little bird's nest. I think it was an Avon perfume that opened up and had a little cream perfume in it. But it was a beautiful, beautiful little kind of golden bird's nest with three little eggs in it. And I actually still have it. And so it turns out that nests are one of the symbols of my purpose. And it's that kind of thing that you can track. Do you have anything that drew you as a child that is still with you, around you, maybe in your car, hanging from your rearview mirror, maybe on your altar? There are many layers of me understanding about what the nest meant to me, and one description is that I am the one who builds nests for other women or people. I specialize in women, but obviously I also work with men. The one who builds nests so that other people can fly. So that's one way I could hold who am I. And that's a really, really different thing than I'm an adult child of an alcoholic, or I'm a orphan child, or whatever kind of pains, like Eckhart Tolle speaks about the pain body, that we may get stuck in. So it opens up the story. And the thing is, it's not either or, it's both and. So my personal story also has components of my gift and my wound that are deeply, deeply connected to my calling. So you could say, for example, part of my personal story is that I grew up needing to be mute and invisible. And part of my mythic journey, you could call it the hero or the heroine's journey, is that I've had to come from that place of mute and invisible and find my way to being visible and vocal. And so there you can see it kind of bridges. It really bridges my own personal challenges and my own life story, but it also kind of starts widening it to something that's holding kind of more universal themes. We can all relate to being invisible. We can all relate to what challenge it is sometimes to be visible, especially if that's one of our places of wounding, is that being visible is dangerous somehow. And take a breath and see what else wants to come. One of the exercises that I really appreciated, some of the work I did that helped me with accessing a larger sense of identity, was through the Animas Valley Institute with Bill Plotkin. And one of the exercises was to go out under the sky in the evening and talk to the stars about who am I. And one of the phrases was, I am the one who. And just letting that roll off your tongue again and again, I am the one who. Or and one of the ways that I've understood myself in terms of my mythic story is I am the one who responds to the call. And so I listen, I deeply listen and follow wherever I feel like my calling is taking me. And I feel like that's something that I've been gifted this life as, something that's actually been easy for me. I've always been able to listen and follow. And so you could say that's part of my mythic identity, that I am the one who listens and responds to the call. She who listens and responds to the call. Another place that we might receive a deeper sense of self is through nature, and how we are drawn to different aspects of nature, and how we're in conversation with different aspects of nature. So this theme will come up later in the week, where we look at allies in this world and the other world. But again, like what aspects of nature call to you? So I did mention nest, that happened to also be nature. It could have been anything. It could have been a circle. But so for me, trees are a deep, deep place of kind of a soul mirror, and birds. If you notice my logo, there's a woman following a bird. And so birds are a really big part of my mythic story. So it's good, just a place to start thinking, what symbols, what places in nature, what beings call you? Are you a mountain person? Are you a water person? Are you a forest person? Are you a desert person? What kind of bioregions draw you? And what does that say about your soul? I'm going to take another moment here. One of the things that I did my dissertation on, the obstacles that women face in engaging their calling. And so I had to read quite a bit and write an 80-page literature review. And some of the things I read, you know, stayed with me much more than others. And one was from a book, I think it was called Synchronicity by Deepak Chopra. And he speaks of identity as well in terms of fluidity, the fluidity that happens when we step into identity that has archetype, has symbol, and that when we're allowing ourselves to experience ourselves that way, possibility can open. Because if we identify only, for example, with the name of our, like a job description, if I say I'm a psychologist, first of all, that's going to bring up different associations for you, and I carry my own associations, some positive, some negative. And suddenly we're in a box. Suddenly there's something that's narrowed. What we're really doing is bringing, infusing that literal word, psychologist, or maybe, you know, you're an elementary school teacher, or maybe you're a chef at a restaurant, but what are you bringing on a soul level to those titles? So again, that we kind of break up the rigidity and the identification that is held kind of tightly by the culture, and start experiencing ourselves as something much deeper. So maybe when you're teaching, third graders, there's a magician in you that shows up and can create magic in the room. Or maybe when you're working at the restaurant and you're cooking, you're tapping into the archetype of the alchemist, and there's something you do in the kitchen that's unique to you and bring some kind of almost transcendent experience to people. So that's what I'm trying to get at and invite you into, is naming what is the identity I'm holding in the culture, and what is the identity I'm holding of myself and my literal story, and how can I just start playing around, like just, you know, finger painting, really, really finger painting. Because if we start trying to do this with our minds, we're just going to go back to the kind of constricted energetics. Let yourself finger paint. You could do a collage. You could just notice when you're out and about what draws your attention. You might notice where it kind of resonates in your body, if there are particular kind of imaginings that get sparked when you see certain images or symbols or types of people. So that's the invitation. And then lastly, in terms of energy, I don't know that I have a lot to say about that at this point, because when we're looking at our mythic story, we really are exploring the level of symbol and myth and archetype. So I want to leave that for later, and I hope that this has opened up some possibilities and some ideas and some curiosity about who am I, and what is my mythic journey, and how does that relate to my calling? Thanks so much.